opinions, and positions expressed on this radio program are those of the speakers, authors, or other contributors, and do not necessarily reflect or represent the views and opinions held by BBS Radio Network or its affiliates. This broadcast is intended for entertainment purposes only.
Space of genuine and heightened awareness. Miracles manifest. Conscious evolution becomes inevitable, and the revelations to one's spirit becomes revolutionary within the simplicity of its own essence. Awakening then becomes of it to where the destination of such a path, when one has answered to the calling, unfolds to reveal the ripening of one's universal truths. The book of positive light, remembrance of the heart.
And now, here is your host for Quantum Mindfulness Radio, Joel Ayala Ayupanya.
So welcome back to Quantum Mindfulness Radio. And I am your host, Joel Ayala Ayupanya, registered nurse and author of the Book of Positive Light, Remembrance of the Heart. Quantum Mindfulness Radio broadcasts every other Monday, 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on the BBS Radio Network. Now, for tonight's show, the topic of main focus for tonight, Global Awakening. I have with me, within this sacred space, my very special guest, Arjuna Arda, author of his new and inspiring book, Better Than Sex. He is a motivational speaker and founder of Awakening Coaching Training in Nevada City, California, a training program dedicated to the awakening of consciousness within the context of ordinary life. As an awakening coach himself, he has trained more than 13,000 others to facilitate this state of awakening. He is the author of 8 books, including the number one national bestseller, The Translucent Revolution, which was featured in O Magazine. He teaches awakening coaching all over the world and has been a frequented keynote speaker at international conferences on the cutting edge of expanding consciousness. Arjuna's latest book, Better Than Sex, describes the art of awakening coaching and then how anyone can become a support to anyone else in discovering what Arjuna has called the opening secret. That is an infinite source of stillness, well-being, and of creativity that can be brought forth in every area of our lives. And so I welcome you, dear friend Arjuna, to Quantum Mindfulness Radio. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Good to be with you, Joel.
Thank you. Thank you for being in this sacred space. And I understand that you had just recently come back from Europe.
Yes, I was teaching in Germany and Austria and Croatia and many countries, yeah.
But when you frequent out to Europe, do you spend a significant time over there, per se, or it's just short burst of energy that you bring forth to Europe?
I usually teach in Europe for 5-6 weeks at a time. I go there several times a year. I was featured in a film, actually, that came out in Germany that won the Grand Jury Prize at the Frankfurt Film Festival. So since then, I've been very popular in Germany. Oh, really, when once you get to be in a movie, it's like, people love you then. So that was a good thing for me.
Now you've been doing this type of awakening coaching training for many years now. Just for our listeners, just so we can get a little background of how you started, how did this whole journey come about for you?
Well, it's a long story. If I tell you the whole story, I'll try and condense it down. But it really started, I suppose, as a teenager, where you know, I think, Joel, when you enter your teenage years, it's really the first time that you can see your family and your situation objectively, you see. Because up until when you're a small child, your family is just the world, and then beyond your family is something vague called the rest of the world. But when you get to be a teenager, for the first time you see your family objectively, and it was then that I realized at 14 that I had been born into a family with an unusually high degree of suffering. You know, it was like the 1950s in London, and there was just a lot of suffering in my family, a lot of mental and emotional anguish. So, like many people, you know, I tried to figure out what to do about it. I didn't want to go crazy or commit suicide, so I wanted to find out what would help. And first thing I investigated, of course, was psychotherapy. But I quickly realized that the shrinks were in worse shape than their clients. You know? So then I discovered the possibility of meditation and spirituality and this concept of enlightenment. So I, you know, pursued all of that. I found how to learn to meditate and all of those kind of things. And that went on for 20 years. You know, I really investigated many different modalities, transcendental meditation and Tibetan Buddhism and all kinds of things. And then in 1991, 20 years later, I met a man in India. I was traveling in India. I met a man who had a profoundly different approach. Instead of giving me something to do to change my state, he started to ask me very powerful questions about my experience of this moment, like the sounds are being heard, who is hearing them? The movement in this moment is being seen, the movement of color and texture and form is being seen. Who is it or what is it that is actually seeing? And in investigating in this way, there was a profound, deep recognition of, you could say, my true nature, which is everybody's true nature, which is, you could say, is awareness, is consciousness, is unborn, undying presence, which is a huge, actually, huge shift to realize you're not really a thing or a separate entity. You are more like a presence, which has no boundaries. It's not separate from everything else.
Absolutely.
So this was a very deep shift, and after some time of being there, maybe a year, he suggested that I go back to America, where I was living, and the way he put it was, share this secret with your friends. So I did that. I went back to America, and I started to kind of guide other people into the same kind of inquiry. What I found pretty quickly, Joel, you know, was that it's quite easy for people to have glimpses of freedom. You just have to question the deeply held assumptions and beliefs about who we are, and then you can easily have a glimpse of your true nature as limitless consciousness. But it's a very different matter if we talk about living from that, living life as that freedom, because we bump up against all kinds of habits and obstacles in our day-to-day life. And so this was now probably 20 years ago, I developed this kind of coaching method, which is a very comprehensive way to live life from a state of freedom. And, you know, people, I know many people have challenges these days, you know, challenges with money and health and the economy and all kinds of things. And so many people might ask, well, I don't have time for, you know, discovering my true nature and all of that. I don't have time for kind of mysticism. I need to get on with practical things. But what I've discovered, actually, is that waking up to your true nature is actually the very most practical thing you can do, because all creativity, all the answer to every problem, all resourcefulness, all kind of well-being and happiness actually arises out of this recognition of your true nature. And when you think about it, it's kind of obvious. You know, when there's a problem, and you have a good night's sleep and you feel rested, the solution pops into your mind. Well, where did it come from? Where did that solution come from? It was not there, and then it was there. It comes from a source deeper than our usual preoccupation with beliefs and reactive feelings. So to be connected to that source, to be constantly in touch with that source, allows you to live a life of freedom, of contribution, of creativity, and of well-being that is not dependent upon addictive desire.
Now, in your book, I've read the first portion of your book and skimming through, and it's a rather skinny book, like you had mentioned in the beginning of your first section. And it talks about that the secret, this open secret, doesn't lie from outside of yourself, that which is the misnomer that many societal constructs try to lead us into. And we could go a whole lifetime trying to search outside of ourselves, but then in the process, if we are so lucky enough to meet that crossroads where we do make a choice of the outside or the inner selves of our being, we are able to make that choice. And, you know, if we're, again, so lucky enough to seek the inner things of enlightenment, wow, that's another road that brings us into many possibilities. And that's what your book describes initially. The secret lies within you. It begins with you, per se.
Yes, and, you know, I call it an open secret because it's only in a certain way is it a secret. It's only a secret in a certain use of language. It's actually an open secret. It's available to absolutely everybody. And it's a very practical thing. You know, it's kind of a strange thing that imagine you go to the store and you buy some kind of a machine. You know, let's say you buy a machine for vacuuming the floor, a vacuum cleaner. And you bring it home and you get it out of the box and you put it together. And then you try turning the brush by hand, right? You try manually turning the brush on the vacuum cleaner to be able to brush the floor. And it doesn't work very well because that vacuum cleaner, it's got a plug on it. You know, it's got a cord with a plug on it. And it's designed to be plugged into a source of energy it doesn't come with that. It has to be plugged in. When you plug the vacuum cleaner in, then it works. And any appliance is like that. It needs power. It needs energy. It needs a source of energy, and then it works great. Well, in the same way, you know, when you try and live life from your limited beliefs and thoughts and reactive feelings, we have very, very limited effect. And so we easily feel powerless, fearful, we easily feel afraid, limited. But there is a possibility, a very real practical possibility, which is not just some mystical talk, it can be exercised immediately. There is the possibility to tap into a source of energy beyond your limited identity. And that's where inspiration comes from, that's where creativity comes from, that's where making money comes from, that's where the love that makes a relationship beautiful comes from. That's where everything comes from. It's extremely easy, actually, to tap into that, and that's what the book explains. It's very, very easy, and the effects on your day-to-day life are immediate.
And within your webinars, your speaking events, do you make mention of the potentiality of what the ego and the heart and many aspects of different approaches plays within trying to reach this source, this unified field, according to quantum theory? Or do you pose that potentiality, that those possibilities to where the ego plays a significant portion of the journey from the ego to the heart or any other source where we can have more of a connection to this source?
Yeah, okay. Well, first of all, you see, the word ego, we use that word very freely, the ego, you know, the ego. And so we assume, because everybody talks about it, we assume that that's something solid and real. However, if you go back, for example, to Shakespeare, who many people think of as a very wise guy who had a lot of great insights about human nature, there's no mention of anything like that in Shakespeare. There's no mention of anything like that in Marlowe or Chaucer or actually, there's no mention of the ego prior to Sigmund Freud. Freud coined the term ego to describe self-centered behavior. And so he made a model where he talked about the ego, the superego, and the id. And it's a model, you see. And the problem is that model was not even popular until after the Second World War. So up until 1945, if you walked around and talked to regular people and said the ego, nobody would know what you're talking about. It was only after 1945 that Freud's theories in the 1950s came into popular understanding, and now everybody talks about the ego. But we forget about the fact that it was a model. It's not real, it's a model to describe behavior. There isn't a thing called the ego. You know, there is just behavior. There's just different kinds of behavior, and certain kind of behavior we label as egotistical behavior, and then we say there's an ego. But this is a great barrier, actually, to think that there's a thing called the ego, because there isn't any thing there. There's just consciousness, awareness, and thoughts and feelings arising in consciousness, arising in awareness. And once you see it clearly, it's completely obvious that there's nothing like that. There's no solid thing called the ego. There's no solid thing called the mind. There's nothing solid in this moment called past. This is all created in thought. But the thing is, of course it becomes real once you make something up in thought. Of course it appears real. But in order to dissolve something which has been made up in thought, it doesn't require action or struggle. It requires relaxation, you see? So, for example, if I'm sitting in my house in the dark, I live in a fairly rural area. So if I'm sitting in my house in the dark, and I hear a tapping noise, and I start to get afraid, and I think that somebody's trying to rob me or murder me, right? So there's this tapping noise, and then I go to investigate, and I see that it's just a bush, and in the wind, and the bush is tapping against the window. Well, I didn't get rid of the robber or the murderer. I didn't kill them. I didn't chase them away. They dissolved through my seeing that they're not real. When I saw that there's no robber, no murderer, then I can relax. You see, I relax, not through doing anything, but through recognizing the truth. In the same way, Joel, there is no ego. There is no thing called ego. It's made up. It's a made-up construct to explain certain kinds of behavior. And if you relax, it's not there. It doesn't exist. It doesn't exist except as an imaginary thing. Now, you also spoke, you talked about the ego, and then he talked about reaching the source, you see. But again, we have to be careful with language, because when we use language, the way that we use the language creates a reality that we then have to deal with. So you talked about reaching the source, but when you talk about reaching, that suggests that it's something far away. You see, like, where do you live right now? I think you might be in Cleveland, is that right?
Cleveland, Ohio, yes, sir.
Cleveland. So if you want to get from Cleveland to New York, what do you have to do?
To get there, you could fly or you can either drive.
Fly or drive. So that takes time and effort, doesn't it? So you could talk about reaching New York. How long would it take you to reach New York?
Driving, it would probably take, maybe 9 hours.
9 hours to reach New York. How long would it take you to reach Los Angeles?
4 days, depending upon whether, you know, you stop or go.
And how long would it take you to reach Cleveland, Ohio from where you are?
I'm here now.
I'm here now. You see, I'm here now. Say it again.
I am here now.
I am here now. You see, so this is the nature of awakening. You see, it doesn't require any effort. You don't have to reach the source. You are the source already. You see, that's why we call it awakening. There's nothing to reach. There's no destination outside yourself to reach. You are that already right now. You and me and everybody listening to this radio show, you are that source. Unfortunately, we've been hypnotized into a trance state of thinking that we are something else. And then arises the false notion of trying to reach where you already are. Now, this creates a massive industry called self-improvement and spirituality and organized religion, and it's all about this idea of battling the ego on a long journey to reach the source. But you could blow all that away with one finger snap and be done with it. You are that source right now. You have to check it out, you see. That's why it's called awakening, not attainment. It's called awakening because you wake up from the trance of the ego and the mind and all this stuff that's been made up. and you realize, I am that right now. I am one with God. I am one with the Spirit of Jesus Christ right now. I'm one with all the goodness and all the love and all the Spirit. And Jesus said, I and the Father are one. And he also said, come follow me. Right? I and the Father are one. One, not two, one, you see? So in this moment now, you are actually one with God, except for a hypnosis of thinking you're weak and separate. And that's the point of coaching. The point of awakening coaching is not to beguile you into some kind of journey, but to help you to relax into recognizing you are here right now. You are already here. You are already at the source.
I do the same thing too for my clients, for my patients on the unit. I do work on a psychiatry unit over here in the suburb of Cleveland, Ohio. And I do the same thing. It's amazing how synchronistic that explanation is and how I have done that for many of the patients that get admitted on the psych unit. And these patients with many different diagnoses, they always make mention of one day I am going to be healed. Tomorrow I'm going to get discharged and things are going to be better for me and so forth. And just what you had relayed out to me and including our audience members, the choices you make in your wording, it's huge. It makes a huge quantum leap to whether you're going to be stagnant within your state of being or whether you're going to evolve into a higher state of awareness in your own healing, in your own growth and evolution. And so I would make the same mention to the patients, you know, choose your wording right. You know, if you're going to be a better person and that you're going to be improved tomorrow, the universe will be giving you exactly what you are asking for tomorrow. And then, you know, I would stick out a pencil right in front of them, and I would ask them, okay, say and do and actually, you know, make the intention of that same statement to me like you would always from this admission, from the last admission, or many admissions from before. Say what you're going to say right now. And they would say, I am going to get better. And so I say, okay, well, with that statement, go and grab the pencil. And they try to grab it and I'll pull away. And, you know, I'll do that many times. I say maybe twice or three times. And they would kind of get upset with me, like, give me the pencil already, you know? And, okay, well, do this. Change your wording. Say, I am better. I am healthy. I am improved now. And then I'll stick it right in front of them. And they would think that I would take away the pencil just like previously. And when they grab for it, they grab it. And it's like, oh, it's like right at that very moment, they have reached that state of awareness and consciousness. Like, I get it. You know, I am in the now. And so, yes, and that is huge when you do make those lessons for them that they can learn. And I understand from what you say, this book in itself, Better Than Sex, is exactly what it is. It is better than sex in many ways, because it's a reaching a level of truth and awareness that we do not know of within the now, within this illusion of things. And like you had made mention before, the ego is very much an illusion that we think that we have, but it was just a psychological construct that was made in order to describe something. But then we have embraced that in many ways, and within the sense, it has caused a lot of limitation as well. So Arjuna, I would want you to collaborate further on that, but within the last 2 minutes of this first segment, and I know you are a little bit limited on time, but I would like to, or actually I would like for you to make a mention of your website, your contact information, and ways of how many of our listeners can get a hold and purchase your book.
Yeah, sure. Well, the website is arjunaardha.com, arjunaardha.com. And you can find the book right there on the website. And you can also go on Amazon. It's available on Amazon as a Kindle edition, as a physical book, or you can buy it as a physical book from our website.
And so when we return back to our show after our station identification break, we will continue our conversation with Arjuna Ardha. author of many books, but more specifically, the book that we have made mention previously, That Is Better Than Sex, on Quantum Mindfulness Radio.
My name is M.A. Carano, experimental philosopher and systems consultant, and you're listening to Quantum Mindfulness Radio, live on BBS. Check me out at www.avatarparadigms.com for your latest metanoetic hookup. Definitely. If it's not mainstream, then you're on BBS.
Hello, my name is Dr. Advij, author of my new book, You're Not Crazy, You're Awakening, and you are listening to Quantum Mindfulness Radio on the BBS Radio Network. And remember, if it's not on mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
Hi, this is Tina Saki, best-selling author of My Spirit Is Not Religious, A Guide to Living Your Authentic Life. I help people self-heal by guiding them to release limiting beliefs and patterns, so that you can live spiritually, open, and authentically. And you are listening to Quantum Mindfulness Radio, hosted by Joe Ayapana. Namaste.
In a world where what we hear, see, and feel is elusively believed to be truth, comes an inspiring book that chronicles the journey of one's courage in seeking divine clarity from that of a different, more profound, more resounding, and inviting truth. A truth from within. Introducing the Book of Positive Light, Remembrance of the Heart. Discover the memoir and journal of author Joel Ayala Ayapana as he invites readers to explore the effortless powers within and the inner makings of their own hearts as they are guided by the very pages of this book. As a template to further exploring themselves from within to the point of self-rediscovery. Author Douglas Ross Hamilton writes, "The Book of Positive Light is a journeyman's guide to grasping the import of acquiring the inner light." Get your copy today at most major online bookstores, including Amazon.com. The Book of Positive Light, Remembrance of the Heart, is made available right here at HollywoodBookTrailers.com. He was restless, resilient, wise beyond his years, but hated to death. He was the Son of God. In the book, Mary's Diary, Mary, the mother of Jesus, takes you on a journey, a personal journey about her perspective of raising the Son of God, along with events that were never told until now. Listen, as Mary pours her heart out about the amazing task and responsibility of raising Jesus, the Savior of the world, and the trouble, pain, and near-death experiences it cost her and her family. Feel the passion, the joy, and the sorrow as she describes her relationship with Joseph, her friends, and even her enemies surrounding the task of presenting Jesus to the world. Mary's Diary, a fictional masterpiece, is a multi-part audiobook series that will take you on a wide range of emotions for hours. Purchase part one, an hour-long musically scored audiobook, for only $1.99, or through other major book retailers like Amazon. All available here at HollywoodBookTrailers.com.
Okay, now we are back to Quantum Mindfulness Radio, and I have my special guest for us tonight, and that is Arjuna Ardal, the author of Better Than Sex. So welcome back, Arjuna, and we will be transitioning back to the second segment of Quantum Mindfulness Radio, as we will be looking further into the definition of awakening. If we can get further into that, I guess we can talk about your experiences, the experiences that you have been noting between America and Europe, and the rising consciousness that we are all experiencing in the now.
Yeah, so awakening very simply means it's awakening always points to this moment now, you know, because in this moment, one thing that's really clear is that we are experiencing things, right? So we are hearing sounds, we're seeing the movement of objects, we're feeling sensations in the body. That's absolutely true for everybody. Whatever your beliefs, whatever anything, you are experiencing things in this moment. So awakening means to recognize that which is experiencing, right? When sounds are heard, we say, I hear the sound, but we don't necessarily know what is the I that is hearing the sound, right? We say, I see the movement of the shape, but we don't necessarily know what is the I that is seeing. Now, when we investigate that which is aware, when we investigate the nature of awareness itself, we discover, actually, that it is limitless. It's limitless consciousness. It has no boundaries. So although there are thoughts and feelings that make up a personal story, that which is aware actually has no story. It's pure consciousness. And this is where all creativity comes from. It's pure energy. It's pure light. It's where love comes from. So once you recognize how to tap into that easily, your whole life is changed. Instead of being a life of acquisition and consumption, your life becomes a life of generosity and giving, because you are full. You recognize that who you are is already full of possibility, is already full of contribution, is already full of overflowing creativity. So the flow comes from the inside, or from who you are, into the world. Your life becomes a natural flow of generosity and giving.
The one way that you had mentioned before, and potentially the only way, I would have to say, but there's many different facets to acknowledging this particular approach, and that is meditation. There are different modalities to meditation, from mantras to deep breathing to many other facets of getting to that into that sacred space. And what would you recommend to other people as well, going into the practice of meditation and making it a little bit easier to calming our minds and getting more focus into our breath?
Okay. Well, you know, that's not really what I teach. You know, I think you're kind of mixing me up with some other stuff, because I don't really teach people to calm their mind or get in touch with the breath or any of that. That's actually more Buddhist. That's a more kind of Buddhist approach, which has today become popular as what they call mindfulness, taught by Jon Kabat-Zinn. But that's not really what I'm doing. So what I explain in the book is a coaching method. And the coaching method has to do with not trying to change anything. You see, calming the mind is trying to change your condition. Getting in touch with the breath is changing your condition. And that's really what we do all the time. We try to change our condition from one state to another. The problem is, when we put our focus on trying to change the condition, you overlook the beauty of the condition you're already in. Now, the condition you're already in is that you're hearing sounds, even if your mind is not calm. You are hearing sounds, and you are seeing objects move, and you are feeling sensations in the body. So that gets overlooked, you see, and that's in a way that the downside of spiritual practices, like to try and calm the mind or something, is you get so caught up in trying to change your condition that you overlook that which is already present, which is experiencing your condition. So meditation, it has, a limited usefulness. It's very much over, the benefits of meditation, in my opinion, are very much over-exaggerated and over-emphasized. So meditation was originally designed for Buddhist or, you know, Buddhist and Hindu monks living in Eastern culture. In the West, we relied more upon prayer. You know, in the Christian tradition, it's more prayer. But in Buddhist and Hindu traditions, it's more about meditation, which means to try and come to stillness. Now, that's a really good thing if you're a monk. You know, if you're living the life of a monk and you've renounced the world and you just want to sit quietly, then that's a really smart thing to do if you need to get more and more and more still. But it has limited, very limited applicability in Western culture. And in my opinion, you know, the attempt to bring Buddhist monastic practices into the West is it has limited applicability. It's a great thing to do maybe for 20 minutes twice a day or something, that it just allows your body to rest. It's extremely much more useful for men than women, because what happens when you sit still, which is really what we mean by meditation, just to sit still and observe, what happens at a neurological and biochemical level is the testosterone reserve in your body goes up. Testosterone is stored in the muscles, but the testosterone reserves are replenished through sitting still in an alert condition. Well, that's really useful for a man because that's how he balances stress. For a woman, it's not nearly so useful because she only has 1/30th as much testosterone as a man. A woman balances stress through the release of oxytocin, which is a different chemical in the brain. Oxytocin is not built up through sitting quietly in meditation. Oxytocin is built up through social interaction. So when a woman goes out to lunch with her girlfriends and has a glass of wine and some cheese and chats about things, not talking about work, but talking about just chatting about, and particularly talking about her feelings, a woman's oxytocin level will increase, and that balances her stress. So right away we can see that what we've emphasized as meditation is really much more applicable to a man's biochemistry than a woman's. But even to a man, meditation can be good for calming, yes, but that doesn't necessarily change the cause of stress in your life. You see, the stress in your life is caused by resistance to what is occurring. So things are happening in your life and you don't like what's happening, and so you go into a resisted relationship to reality, which is stressful. Well, there's a lot of other ways to handle that besides sitting still. In fact, if you're having trouble in relationship, if you're having trouble with your health, if you've got high blood pressure, all kinds of things, sitting still is not necessarily the obvious solution, Now, I'm not against meditation. I do, have a limited use of meditation in my life, but in our coaching work, we do not see meditation as a universal panacea. It has an applicability for some people under the right conditions, but for many people, going for a walk might be much more useful than meditation, or making love might be much more useful than meditation. For a woman, as I said, just going shopping is a probably more useful spiritual practice for a woman than meditation, because when a woman goes shopping, she's surrounded by smells and textures and colors, all of which increase her oxytocin. So when a woman goes shopping, goes to Macy's or Nordstrom and looks at all the things for 2 hours, she doesn't have to buy anything, but just that exposure to sensory-based experience, it increases her oxytocin level, reduces her stress, and she feels more relaxed and more natural and more at home. So this is, this is where I think we've got to be careful that what was thought of as a universally applicable practice for Buddhist monks is not necessarily a universally applicable practice for people today. And that's what the book is about. I hope you'll have a chance to read the whole book at some point, but the book explains that trying to create universal panaceas like meditation or yoga and say everybody should do this, it's simply uninformed, because people are very different. People have different lifestyles, different nervous systems, different background, and what's a good practice for one person might be a terrible practice for another person. So that's where coaching is really helpful, because coaching is a one-on-one relationship, and a good, skilled coach can help you find the perfect practice for you. Now, for example, I just mentioned for women, honestly, for many women, I would recommend them to dance more than to meditate, because when they dance, they're moving their bodies, their feelings are flowing through their bodies, and they feel light. They feel love flowing through their system. They feel great. For a man, meditation could be good, but for many men who need to give their gift, most of the men I know are not monks, they're in the world. So the practice, for example, of Qigong, which is also comes out of China, but it's a moving practice, it's a centering practice which involves your body, it actually has a much more beneficial effect on giving your gift in the world than simply sitting quietly. So meditation could be good, but we have to be careful, because there are these catchphrases that have entered into common parlance now, like, watching the breath or calming the mind. And it's like, why? Why would you want to calm the mind? I like my mind. It's active. It's creative. It's what you want to what you want to work with is resistance. A mind that's in resistance is a mind that creates stress. But a mind that's creative and resourceful is good. You know, why would you want to shut that down? It's a good thing. So I think we have to be careful that we don't just, just develop catchphrases in this way, thinking that there's a universal, one universal cure for everything. There were a lot of Buddhist and Hindu teachers who were imported to America and Europe in the 1960s, people like Maharishi Mahesh Yogi and various others, who really introduced monastic disciplines for a Western culture. And I think by now we've seen that these kind of practices have a limited applicability, limited. They're really good in the right circumstances, but a good coach can help you find the perfect practice for you. And that's where I would say coaching is a much better model than some kind of, universal teaching. If when everybody tries to follow the same teaching, it generally is only going to work for a few people. Coaching is a highly personalized way to go about your full self-expression, living a life that's beautiful and good and marvelous.
Now, over the break, we had made mention of what I do as a career and as a living as a psychiatric nurse. So do you find many benefits for the healthcare worker and helping the psychiatric population?
Actually, I do talk about that in the book. So there is a chapter called Psychotherapy and Awakening. So, yes, for the healthcare professional, awakening coaching can be really great because it helps them to connect with who they truly are in this moment, which is this limitless consciousness, limitless love, which is your true nature. I would say generally awakening coaching is not suitable for psychiatric patients. And I did go into that in quite a lot of depth in the book, that we need to be careful, that we don't, again, we don't apply universal panaceas. So the analogy that I give in the book is to a gym. If you go to the gym, it's a really good idea to go to the gym and work out if your body is in good condition. But if you've got a torn ligament in your knee, for example, going to the gym and trying to do the same exercises that other people do could be incredibly damaging and really harm you much more than you were hurt already. So if you've got a torn ligament, you don't want to go to a trainer at the gym. What you want to do is go to a knee surgeon who can help to heal your knee. So, of course, having a torn ligament, that's something everybody can accept. It's just, it's bad luck, but it doesn't make you a bad person. It just means you've got a torn ligament. Unfortunately, being a psychiatric professional, there's a lot of stigma around mental illness, right? So if somebody's got a bad back or high blood pressure, we go, oh, bad luck. If somebody's got acute anxiety or bipolar, we tend to, think, oh, there's something wrong with you, or we don't have the same kind of sympathy or empathy that we do with physical conditions. But mental illness is just an illness of the brain. And I would say that, generally speaking, spiritual practices are not the best solution for that. That's why it takes years and years and years and years to train as a psychiatrist or as a psychotherapist, because we need to know how these conditions work, and they're very often affected by brain chemistry. So there's a lot that we can do, not only with psychiatric drugs, but there's a lot of alternative supplements we can use today to alleviate mental illness. For example, there's a lot of understanding now about different foods which increase GABA in the brain, which reduce stress chemicals in the bloodstream. So I think it's very, very important to make a distinction between psychiatric illness or emotional and mental illness, which needs to be treated by professionals, and awakening, which is really awakening. An awakening approach like awakening coaching is really more suitable for people who are in a normal balanced condition but want to have greater access to their creativity.
Arjuna, definitely a different approach, but yeah, definitely for sure a more realistic type of a way of looking at this awakening thing that is happening all over the world. And instead of going towards the buzz phrases like you had mentioned earlier, you're basically going in between those buzz phrases and making a delineation between what is appropriate and what is...
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Joel. Yeah, thank you. I think that's kind of important, you know, because... In the book, I give a lot of examples of people who tried to adopt a sort of universal panacea to their detriment. You know, there's a story in the book about a woman who took up meditation when she was in her teens because she wanted to know God, you know. And I met her when she was in her 40s, you know, and she had short, cropped gray hair, gray clothes, gray skin. She looked completely lifeless. And she'd been meditating for, you know, 30 years or something. And I said to her, you know, I said, I would suggest to you that you stop meditating completely. And instead of meditating, dance every day. Just put on music and dance. And dance with other people and spend time with other women and share your feelings with people. She thought feelings were the enemy because she had been raised on this hyper-masculine meditation-braced approach. So she started dancing and hanging out with other women. And 6 months later, I went back to the same city and I met the same woman. But I didn't look like the same woman because she was, you know, this looked like the daughter of the woman I had met before. She was, you know, she had longer hair, she had colorful clothes, she was smiling, her skin was fresh. I would have thought that it was the daughter of the previous woman. Well, this woman, she'd followed my advice and she'd come alive, like watering a plant, you know. So that's a good example where meditation had basically killed this woman's heart, you know. And when she got into some more feminine practices, which are described in the book, her whole being came alive again. So we need to be careful, you know, we need to be careful not to get dogmatic about these things, but to let everything be free and flowing and to recognize we're like children, you know, in our hearts, we're like children. And children, they don't do these, you don't get children kind of sitting all doing the same thing. Children play. When children go to a sandpit, each child plays in its own unique way. And that's really the nature of our life here on the planet. You know, we're here to play and to be ourselves. It's very important not to put people in boxes and say that everybody should do the same
with
thing.
With less than 1 minute left on our time here, could you please mention to the audience members any upcoming workshops, events, and also to list out your contact information website as well?
Yeah, so the website is arjunaardha.com, arjunaardha.com. And I think probably the next event that will be interesting for people is to come and train as a coach. We have a training starting in September, in about 6 weeks' time, and that would be wonderful to have people join that training. And in 16 weeks, you can learn all of the basic skills of awakening coaching. You can coach each other. You can learn how to dissolve resistance, how to experience radical awakening, which means to really have a clear, doubt-free recognition of your true nature as limitless. You can learn all the skills you need to become proficient in awakening coaching in 16 weeks.
Arjuna, again, I thank you for all that you do.
Yes, thank you, and
I thank you as well for joining me here on the Sacred Space on Quantum Mindfulness Radio.
Thank you so much. All the best.
Fit conquered the beast. Now look who was crowned in the 1930 to sit upon David's throne, His Majesty. Come fi rule this world, it's just theocracy. I and I see it is no mystery. Man, him a day in Ethiopian country. Up in the order, come
fi fight for dumpers, people the earth, rightful ruler, collective security, cause her man the conqueror, now nuclear weapon, progressive is I emperor, me say so, I'm the father of a new race, revealing us, Zion has his dwelling place, around his throne, a nation bent on their knees, me love your father, when me sing and up, me say, why you die? His majesty, come fi rule this world, it's theocracy. I and I see, it is no mystery. Man, him a day in Ethiopian country.
If you had missed this show or any other previous broadcasts, please visit us at Quantum Mindfulness Radio's official website at www.quantummindfulnessradio.com. Again, that is www.quantummindfulnessradio.com. All previous and prior broadcasts are archived at the BBS Radio Network. Please join us every other Monday, 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on the BBS Radio Network. Again, I thank you once more for joining me here tonight on Quantum Mindfulness Radio.